This show is brought to you by Onnit.com.
Oh, shit.
What do you say, sorry?
Nothing. I said, oh, shit.
This show is brought to you by Onnit.com. Go to Onnit.com and use code word church to get 10% off of your order of all of the great optimization products like Alpha Brain, New Mood, Shroom Tech Immune, Shroom Tech Sport. Go to IronDragonTV.com and use code word Joey to get 2 free rentals of all of their great martial arts movies. They also have Onnit videos. They have a lot of great programming for you, and they're always adding more. And they're going to start having 4K technology very soon, and they already don't have it. They have Jackie Chan movies. The Ip Man series. Stop messing with me. I'm not even that high yet, but you're just trying to mess with me. Go to hitecigs.com. Better tasting, longer lasting. The proof is in the vape. They have e-cigarettes and e-cigars for you. When you use code word Joey's Church, you're going to get 20% off of your first order. And go to naileditlife.com. Use code word Joey Diaz to get 20% off of your order.
Jesus Christ. Oh, shit. Oh, shit. It's your type of night, people. Monday, March 2nd, the day the devil was buried at sea. Lee Syatt, Greg Proops, it's going down. Kick it, Lee. Kick that fucking horse. You got a new sound system. I'm over here deaf.
You can't hear it?
I hear it, but I, you know. Like, I'm on an airplane. That's all you got, Uncle John?
I want them to be able to hear you.
I don't want nobody to hear me. I want them to hear fucking Peter Gabriel, the Savage. Beautiful. What's up, buddy?
Not much, just... I don't know why you gave me edibles.
Don't worry about it. It's just a bump in the fucking road. That's why it's Monday. It's a beautiful day. You should have had one this morning for breakfast, but you eluded me all day.
I didn't elude you.
Lee Syatt, Greg Proops in the house. What's up, sexy motherfucker?
Hello, Joey. Everything's groovy, man.
Always a pleasure to see you. Always.
Excuse me. It's lovely to be here.
You're a beautiful man. Lee Syatt, how was the weekend in Florida? Talk to me.
It was good. It's just, as I'm getting older, it's interesting to see your parents as... Like, when you're young, you see them as, like, I don't want to use this word, superheroes, but they seem like adults, and they know it, and now that I'm getting older, it's just, he's just a guy, and it was fun. We went and got a steak, we went to Italian food, we went to see a movie. It was a good time.
You didn't smoke a number with him, see? That's
no.
What he needs. That's what that father-son bonding is all about. Mm-hmm. Smoking a number, going fishing.
I just found out that I actually brought a joint. One of the pre-rolled joints you gave me was in the bottom of my backpack. I kept wondering why it was stinking like weed, and I looked, but it was like in a hidden little corner, and I flew twice with it, so thanks for that.
There you go. And did they arrest
you? You should have burned it when you were there.
That's right. Did they arrest you?
No, they didn't arrest
me. See what I'm saying? See what you learn sometimes when you forget something's in a bag? That happened to me one time, too. So what are you going to do? That ever happened to you, Greg Proops?
Well, you know what they say, only users lose drugs. And yes, I've lost them before. On my person, in my car, anywhere you can imagine.
Somebody says they got robbed, like they robbed shit out of luggage.
Probably do every once in a while. I don't think there's much supervision over the baggage.
Kennedy Airport, I know they had scams a couple of years ago, airports like that. That's it. So Florida was good? You go swimming or anything?
No,
Bikini on and jump in the fucking ocean? Nothing?
No.
You didn't put no number two on and go out there and get some suntan?
The pool's always empty. It's hysterical. Really? It's a retirement village of old Jews. They don't go to the pool.
And how far from the pool?
20-minute walk.
How far from the beach?
I don't know.
Did you even see the ocean?
No.
Fuck no. Why would you even go look at the ocean? You're allergic to the fucking water, aren't you? All the places your girlfriend wants to go on an adventure, you don't go down to the beach ever?
No, not really.
Really? You don't like the beach at all?
You used to go to the beach, right? You used to go to Malibu a lot.
Yeah. But then Mercy gets car sick. My daughter gets car sick. Right. She's 2, so I can't do dick till the car sickness.
Right.
You have children? Yes, you do.
I don't. No, none that I know of. Okay. As you know, women are sneaky.
That's right. You never know. So you might have sold one to some Koreans for 50 bucks. What's up, Greg Proops, you fucking savage?
Nothing, man. Everything. The shit's burning. I got a book coming out. I got the video that we were talking about. I'm on the road. Who's Line Shooting Again? And so, yeah.
ABC
Life
still?
Is Rich. No, it's on the CW now. So you have to be, 13, 14. To know that the network exists.
There you go.
Yeah.
At least you're working, brother.
Yeah, man.
A lot of fucking people, a lot of work, a lot of people crying. I get a call every 3 days. Hey, you been going on auditions lately? No, that's why I do a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to worry about fucking auditions no more and going out and worrying. And some guy called me the other day. You want to come in for a movie on Sunday? Not really.
Yeah.
Not really. I mean, I didn't even think about it, but not really.
And it was good because your flight got delayed.
Oh, I got delayed like a motherfucker.
Oh, so you couldn't have gotten there anyway.
I wouldn't have gone anyway, but I got to the airport at 10 to 6 in the morning, and the plane didn't take off till 3:05.
Yeah.
Luckily, I had three stars of death, these anti fucking debts. I popped two of them on the way into the airport, and I popped one going through security. By 12 o'clock, I was on fire, sizzle, because I ate them on an empty stomach, right. Basically. I ate them like 20 minutes before anything even existed in my stomach. My stomach gobbled those fucking things up tremendously. Fucked up, Lee. You understand me? I was thinking about you. You're sitting there all celibate on a couch looking at the fucking ceiling, cocksucker.
I don't think Flora is that cool with weed.
It doesn't matter. You're the Captain Kirk of the Enterprise. You're not going to smoke weed because Florida ain't cool with it, but they sell Oxycontin and heroin and fucking scams and, you know, what are you worrying about?
My dad lives in a retirement village where they don't let people park on the side of the street.
That's perfect. That's even better.
What?
That's even better. You go out to the balcony, you take three or four.
No one would even notice.
Do you really believe? I mean, what is wrong? What are we going to do here? It's a retired community. They're 80 years old, 70 years old. If they sniff weed, you might save their fucking lives for an extra 2 years. Did you ever think about that? You might
save their lives?
You never know, Lee. It's fucking excitement for people.
Yeah, it is.
They got them all. Do you want to end up in a retirement community?
No.
Do you, Lee?
No.
Okay, then. Then think about smelling weed, like sitting there outside looking at the trees thinking, when the fuck am I going to die? And all of a sudden, you just get a blast of reefer out there. Yeah. You got to dial 911. You're going to go, holy shit. Remember when I used to smoke weed? I went to see On the Waterfront, and I went to see Jimi Hendrix. Maybe I should go get some fucking reefer. That's right. And they're going to go to the bank account and pull $20 out and call their grandchildren and get some fucking weed sent to them. You could have saved somebody old. And I told you that before you left. I go, weed. I go, Lee, are you bringing an edible for your dad? Oh, no. I got to travel. Bring him something. You could have both ate an edible and giggled. I bet you both sat there and looked at each other for 5 days like two moose. You didn't go to the beach or nothing. You didn't go swimming.
No.
You looked at those bagels. You cut them in half. I tell you to bring a little reefer for him. He's a good guy, Dickie said.
Yeah, he loves reefer.
Sure. What did you do? Did he have any?
No.
What the fuck? Did you ask him?
No, I don't know, he's like 60-something years old.
Aren't we all?
He ate an edible when he was here like nothingly.
Well, that's because you give it.
Two or three of them.
He always feels bad. He always says to me, I always feel bad when I see Joey because I don't get to say anything. Because you always get him so fucked up that he can't even speak.
Oh, please, he loves it. He smoked. Remember the one time we lit a joint up and it was like he hadn't smoked a joint in 30 years.
Right.
He just started taking puffs of it, but he forgets that it's not 1960 no more.
Right. And the weed's crippling.
The weed is crippling. Fucking guy, you go down and see your dad. You didn't bring him a T-shirt, a hat, nothing.
He has a couple of he has my T-shirts.
All right, I'm just checking. You said I got to deal with Greg.
Yeah.
He goes down to Florida, doesn't smoke a number with his dad.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's cool that you tour with Who's Line. My brother and I used to watch that all the time.
You can still watch it. It's still on.
Yeah. No.
Thank you for watching it when you did.
Now, what was first, stand-up or improv?
I was a stand-up comic in high school and whatnot, and then, just terrible shit. And then
in Phoenix?
No, I'm from San Carlos, California. I was born in Phoenix, but I always lived in California. And then I joined an improv group in college, and that's where I learned, like 1979. And so that's when I learned to do improv. And then after that, I did stand-up again, and then I was in an improv group, and then it's sort of been both.
Now, improv, what's the big famous one out of Chicago?
Second City.
And that's the long form.
Well, they do sketches and long form. I think their main stage show is sketches, some that are classics and some that are written, and then they write sketches, and then they do improv in between and stuff like that.
And what's the long form? People have always spoken to me about that.
Long form is like, there's a bunch of different formats for long form, and it's not something I do a lot. I have done it. You can do musicals, you can do Shakespeare's, you can do novels. There's one group that does improvised mysteries, one group does Jane Austen books. And Second City probably does their own one. UCB does one called Ass Cat, where you tell a story and then they come out and do these long stories, improvs about it, which is, that one's really fun. Because you tell the story, you don't have to get up and improvise. And then they get up and improvise what happened. But in the Whose Line group, we just do, you know, short improvs like we do on TV. And we bring the audience up and all that. We have music. It's like a rock show. We hit the stage running.
Now
that's a lot of energy.
The theater you went to in Northern California, what was it? I'm sorry.
Oh, in San Francisco, we were up in, God, where were we? We were in Chico, and then we played the like Wells Fargo Center in Santa Rosa or something. No, we played Marin.
But was that any of the type of like improv they do here? No groundlings. What's Lady of Chicago? She's a famous, all those people. She invented the long form.
Oh, Viola Spolin.
Viola Spolin.
Yeah, yeah, Viola Spolin. And then Keith Johnstone. Those are the two big improv gurus. And then Dell, I guess, in Chicago and stuff. Del. No, I never went to a class. I learned from the other kids. I never went to groundlings. I never went to War Babies or whatever.
You just said, fuck it, old school.
Well, I mean,
no fucking ITT tech here.
I got taught by the other kids, so I didn't feel like I had to go to class after that. Also, I remember, this is how it happened. I went to see, there was a cantina in my dormitory, and they didn't have booze. They had, like, cookies and whatnot. And they had an improv group there. So I went down, and they called someone out of the audience. And so I went, I'm fucking going next week, because I can fucking do this as good as them. So I sat in the front row, and they went, can we get someone out of the audience? We're going to do audience spot. And I jumped up, and I did a sketch with the guy. And the next day, I was playing pinball. This will give you an idea of how long ago it was. In the student union, and his name was Reed Rallman, and he came up to me and he said, you want to be in my group? And so I joined the improv group there. And then they taught me how to play all the games, and that was that.
You never did any improv, Joey?
I thought about it. I went to the place on Hollywood for a few months, but there was nothing ever really opened up. I took, like, sketch writing.
Right.
I was always interested in the outlay of sketch, and when they first opened Improv Olympic, I took that. I think I took two semesters of it, and then...
A lot of the schools are waiting. You know, they get money out of people, and then they move you up to this stage and that stage. There's the second, you know, there's hierarchy within it. And I avoided all of that. And then I got lucky because Whose Line, the producers came to San Francisco, and I got right on that. And then I hadn't probably done improv in about 3 or 4 years when I got on Whose Line.
That stuff has always been very interesting to me.
Well, you're the one.
A young guy will... Or a woman will move out here after college and go to Groundlings or Improv Olympic and give them thousands of dollars.
Right.
And go through the levels of their comedy courses and the breathing and the whole fucking shemack. And I don't know where the end is. Like, I don't know. There's a graduation. Now, what happens after the graduation for sketch?
I don't know. That's the thing. You're sent into the vast pool of actors here in L.A. to fucking make your way and do whatever, write a sketch. Not that there isn't a lot of successful improv people. Obviously, right now, the Saturday Night Live and all the sitcoms are dominated with, like, Amy Poehler and all of them. They're all from improv background. Stephen Colbert, Tina Fey, whatnot. And all the younger guys, too, I think, all went through improv. So it's a good way to learn to do sketch and all that jazz. I just feel like... I don't like hierarchy, I don't like rules, and I don't like fucking authority at all. And so, for me, that's what the appeal of stand-up was at the beginning when I was a teenager. I got treated like a grown-up, I got to smoke and drink in the bars with people, and no one asked your fucking age as long as you could do it. So I thought there was a certain egalitarian democracy to comedy. You didn't have to have a degree, you didn't have to be from fucking Harvard, you didn't have to have connections. As long as you carried on being funny, you were going to get a job. And the improv kind of happened for me that way. And like I said, I got very lucky and got on. What are the chances of getting on the only improv show in the world at that point? And I did it for 14 years. And then they brought it back like 2 years ago, which is out of control. The same fucking show after 14 years, you know.
It was on ABC for 14 years.
It was on British TV for 10 years, ABC for 4 years. And we stopped in, like, I don't know, 2003, 2004, and then they brought it back, like, 2 years ago on the CW.
So you also live in
London. 25 years I've been doing the show.
Oh, my God.
But I only do, you know, we only shoot 1 or 2 days. I never put a whole year in. I didn't have to go every week. There was none of that. It was better than doing a TV series because you didn't have to. Have I been off the mic too far the whole time?
No, they can hear you.
Okay. You don't have to show up every day.
You've been very fortunate. There's a lot of guys.
Very fortunate.
Like, in L.A. that...
Of course, I'm immortally talented, so that's part of it.
Well, that's part of it.
And it's also scandalous how poor I am, considering how marvelous I am. But
well, absolutely, because, you know, maybe you don't beat to the drum that they want you to beat to.
No, so I don't.
You never know. I mean, you never know what it could be, but I've always looked at you one of those guys that you're... First off, I never believed in a stand-up that just did stand-up. when a guy tries to be revolutionary
yeah.
and say I'm a stand-up, that shit has always shut me off. Because yeah. I had that attitude for like 2 weeks. Then right. I moved here. And then you realize that that stand-up shit goes out the window. People want to talk to you about this and this yeah. and that. So I always respected that. Somebody who could write and do something different. When I saw you at the Improv many years ago, you know, whatever, you made me laugh. I liked how you always dressed on stage.
Well,
it was
thank
impeccable.
You.
I'm a fat fuck, so suits that. Suit never. You, one of the first guys, you know, we all see Lenny Bruce.
Yeah.
I'm 52. We all see Richard Pryor. We all see, you know.
I lowered myself down.
That's fine.
We all see Eddie Murphy. And then we see a Rodney Dangerfield special. And on that special, I see a guy named Lenny Clark who comes out with a gorgeous suit, tailor-made maybe for that night.
Yeah.
He borrowed the 800 from his cousins. But you could see how the suit fits. It just has a weird look to how it fits, you know. And when you wear a suit, it looks like a fucking suit.
Well,
and I've always,
you,
my dad had that. My my biological father had that look with a suit. My mom said he could wear a fucking $10 suit.
Right.
It's just, and then I saw you on this TV show, and I watched a few times, you know.
Did you really?
I mean, it's not, who the fuck is home at that time?
Yeah.
You know, show me a comedian that, you know, you're out. When I first moved here, you're out every night of the week.
Yeah, you're working,
you know,
all
seven
the time.
Nights, you're home Sunday, maybe.
Right.
Maybe in those days, if they didn't give you a spot, but you went to the store at least and tried to get up a fake the funk.
Yeah.
You know, so I never even knew. When I moved to L.A., I hadn't watched TV. Maybe 7 years before that.
No, of course, you're busy.
I did not know who was on top of sports anymore.
No.
When I moved to L.A. in 97, I had watched the 94 or 95 NBA playoffs because the Houston Rockets were in it. But besides that, that's when I got absorbed with comedy, like that sixth year in comedy. And I lost touch with everything, health.
Yeah.
You know, I had a toothache. Fuck it. It went for a year.
Yeah.
You know, all your focus is coming to L.A. and just trying to get in that niche. And but the bottom line is I saw you on this TV show, and I was like, that's amazing that this guy is able to do this, stand up. And then I saw you at different places. It had to be Houston.
Yeah.
And I've always believed in that. I always think that your life is more exciting. Like, I got to take this show now for 3 weeks. And then you stay home for a week and a half. I got to do stand up now for 2 weeks. Then you might shoot a TV show for 3 weeks. Then you have 2 weeks off. But it's not that same fucking grind every week of having to deal with club owners and selling tickets and the shitty weather and whether or not there's a state fair. And
yeah, no shit. That's the only part that's a grind. I mean, I don't mind, you know, I would do anything not to work in an office or have to have a real job. And but sometimes the late night show, you're like, ugh. Or when everybody's drunk, or, you know, you're like, sometimes it's work. When it's going good, it doesn't feel like work at all. But as someone said, it's not the hour you're on stage. It's the other 23 hours of the day. You're traveling, you're going on the radio, whatever you're doing. You're being paid to just kind of cart your ass around and generally be funny.
By fucking Saturday, what do you feel like by Saturday at 3 in the afternoon?
Sometimes I want to just burn one and not do anything, or I'll go, I'd give anything not to go on tonight. And then other times I'm like, I've got to get on because I got all this new stuff and, you know, you're inspired. And then if it goes well, you're like way too inspired for the second show, and then everybody's drunk and doesn't care anymore. And then you got to do all your old shit because it works.
It doesn't matter at that point.
Yeah, and then you just go, look, I'm just going to get through this.
I feel now.
But I'm generally inspired because
inspired,
I have a podcast
yeah.
every week. Every club I go to, the podcast is either the first night or the, you know, it's in there somewhere. So that makes me, you know, and then I'm constantly on it because you got to get your shit together for the podcast.
How did you find the clubs were when you said you wanted to bring a podcast? Because we've done a bunch of podcasts live, but mostly in the LA area. And we've encountered a lot of clubs. They don't know. They think it's stand up or they don't want to do it. And if you're doing it every week or every week that you're out, has it been a battle trying to get them to do it?
A little bit. It was more a couple of years ago. It's a little less now. The first time I went to Good Nights in Raleigh, they had no idea what it was. The first time I did it in Zany's in Chicago, they just literally didn't know what it was. Cleveland, the same thing. A couple of years ago, I did one there. And the woman on the phone goes, what's a podcast? I go, you've heard of Joe Rogan? You've heard of Marc Maron? She goes, yeah. I'm like, well, they're really popular. because of podcasts. And then you bring in your, you know, I bring my Zoom if they can't record it. I have a little Zoom recorder and we plug it into the thing and do it. So it's a one-man band, you know. But yeah, they do. They're resistant because they think stand-up's the only way to have comedy. But these are the same people who think that putting an ad in a newspaper is going to get people down to the club. You know, like they're caught in a kind of a little bit of an antique model. If it were, if you know, I think you, television doesn't, if you do morning television, I don't know that it gets anyone into the club. You know what I mean? You do it anyway because you got to do it. But I think the podcasts do more to get people in the club than anything else. And also the people that come to the podcast are there for you. There's maybe 10 people that don't know why they're there. Whereas at a stand-up show, if it's Saturday night and there's a lot of bachelorette parties or bachelor parties, there might be 50, 60, 100 people that have no idea why they're there. They just went out to drink and you happen to be on. So do they like you? Do they not like you? If you're lucky, everybody knows you. You know what I mean? I'm not at the superstar level where I walk in. And I mean, with Who's Live, it's different because those are theaters and everybody goes mad because they're all there to see Ryan Stiles and, you know, all that jazz. And so those shows are just, it's up to you to fuck that up. You know what I mean?
That's,
then you just go on and just try to hit it as hard as you can and be funny.
You know? When you go on the road with these guys, do you have like an audition at 5? No, like a rehearsal?
Oh, no.
No, you motherfuckers go raw at 8 o'clock.
Exactly.
No warm up.
We drink before. Beautiful. Yeah.
That's what I was looking at.
We drink vodka, yeah. They used to drink whiskey a lot more, but now it's almost everyone's on vodka. Joel Murray drinks whiskey. I drink vodka, and Jeff and Ryan drink vodka.
When I first saw...
You get loose and then you go on.
Fuck yeah. No, I'm with you. I see that. When I first saw improv was a troupe out of Denver with Jeff Harms. And this is back when I started comedy in 91. And I always thought it was very neat. I just didn't know what else to do to pursue it. I had my hands full with a divorce and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And then when I moved to L.A., one night I went on a date with a girlfriend and we went over to someplace on... La Brea, maybe.
Yeah,
Her girlfriend was in one of the things, and I watched, and I always felt, so when Improv Olympic opened, I watched it on Saturday Night Live, but the sketches, maybe in another word, maybe a funny scene, you know, but then there's what your show does, and that's... just a different...
Well, we go a million miles an hour. That's the thing.
That's completely...
So when people join the cast, and they've put a few new people in the last couple of years, they're all very good improvisers, so they jump right in. But there's been people they've stuffed in that, you know, like, you're like, wow, this is a shark tank. We're not mean. We're all supportive. But when someone new is in there, man, the joke comes in the first 2 seconds, you know? You're angry at your ex-wife. You know, you're the weatherman, and you're angry at your ex-wife. And in comes a cat, and you know, like they write the whole scenario, so you have to play it out.
Play it right out.
So there's no going like, let me set the scene here, because it's television. And so we just go miles an hour, and Ryan and Colin and Wayne are just, you know, fucking tremendous. We throw the ball. As I said, we pass the ball like the Showtime Lakers. No one looks over their shoulder. Everybody fucking just tremendous. Shoots the ball back. And because you know the other person's got it and it's going to go. And probably has more energy and more direction than you. That's the scary part. They're all really focused. So that part makes it fun. I've known these guys for 100 years, you know.
How often do you get the question, is it fake or is it
not so much anymore. Or? We used to get it more. People would go, well, how could you do it? And it's like, how can a surgeon... perform surgery. I can't do that. Because he went to school for 8 years. You know, like, I've done it a lot. That's how we can do it. How can you get up and do stand-up? I think what people are most freaked out by is the idea of being on stage and not having a script or being on stage and not having anything to say. They think they'll blank. But if it's something you want to do and you're a complete ham and you're lazy and you don't want to learn lines, then it's the ultimate comedy because you don't have to learn lines.
But there's no safety there, and that's what you're attracted to. That's what I like about it.
That's why I like it.
And that's why I like it.
That's what I do in my podcast, too. I improvise a lot of the podcast, as much as I possibly can. And when I'm getting stale is when I know when I'm repeating the same stories over and over. And when it's good, I go off on a flight, you know, in some kind of crazy imagination. You know, try to be fucking colorful and funny and poetic and weird and not play into expectations. I find that if I make a mistake, I follow the mistake. You know, if like I fuck up a word or something, I'll repeat the word like 1,000 times and try to make it into something else. And I don't know. This is a very pretentious quote, but it's true. Leonard Cohen said, cracks are where the light shines through, right? So you think with stand-up, you want to get up there and you want to do it the way you want it to be written. You want it to present it. With the podcast, if something happens or someone tells me something or I think of something or someone gives me something and it keys me into it, I'll follow that.
Yeah, you have
to go. Fucking way. And not, and there goes the script.
No,
that's how I like to play. And like the, you've done the set list, Provenza's
yes,
thing.
Yes, yes.
See, I love that because they're throwing things at you. And so it's up to you to, you know, whatever you're going to do with it.
I think it caught me in shock the first time.
Yeah, I bet, man.
Shock.
Were you able to get through it?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Here's the deal. When I first started comedy, for some reason, I just improvised. It was Tuesday nights right. In Boulder. I started in Denver, but I developed in Boulder, and it was a steak comedy night. So for $14.95, you got a steak and a comedian, okay?
Yeah. Or you.
No, two comics. Oh, okay. Real good comics. Yeah, yeah. Triple booked them, and it was... In those days, it was funny. Years later, I've seen these guys still working on the road or out here, and that's... So after the third week, you couldn't do the same material. It was the same 60 fucking mutts who came in to eat the steak. And my goal in those days was just to get them to look up from the steak.
Yeah.
After the third week, I bombed. And I kept bombing. So I go, I got to do something different. So sometimes I would open up dancing to music. And in those days, I would go, you know what? Forget about laughter. If I could get them to book their fucking fork
there. Right.
If I could just strike a nerve. And that's all I would do. But I would improvise. When I wanted to move forward in stand up, especially in Denver in the clubs, they didn't go for that. When I was in New York City developing, that's New York style. Yep. What's going on? What do you do for a living? Yep. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, we attack it. Once I moved to LA, it wasn't shunned upon, but it was secretly told not to do.
No, don't work the crowd.
Right, don't work the crowd. It wasn't
material,
shunned upon.
Do your material.
Tight. Even fuck around.
No, tight as you can.
I stopped doing it.
Yeah.
I stopped doing it.
Right.
So here, and don't get me wrong, there's times I go on stage and the comic in front of me says something and you take the fucking ride. This 9 out of 10 times I'm going on stage with a list, not even a list, of a route. Yeah. I'm going up on stage with a route. And I realized I haven't even touched that route, that I went off on something else. And Lee will go with me a lot of times. And he'll go, you never talked about that bit. And I go, no, we just did that shit tonight. That was all fresh.
Right.
Oh, my God. Yeah, because it was just, I like that style.
Me too. It's my favorite style.
That shit are the same thing. When I first got into comedy, I saw What's-His-Name from Boston. I had never watched stand-up comedy before. I always heard it in albums. And I went to see some guy from Boston.
Stephen Wright.
And then the next year I went again. I paid for the ticket this time. And he did the same
thing. Right, all the same jokes.
And I left there. And I'll never forget going, if I ever stand up was never in him. I was a criminal back then.
Right.
And I remember going, if I was ever a stand up, I would fucking write new material at least. Because I know stand up is based off something happening in your life or something happening in front of you, you know? So I always made that mental note. And that's why now you'll never see me do the same set twice.
Well, that's nice. I repeat stuff, and I bring back golden oldies, and some things go in and out of rotation.
You have to. Right, no. That, yes. But I'm not going to go up there and start A to Z explicitly every night.
No.
That's
too boring.
And when they come to see you the third year in a row, they look at themselves and go...
He's always doing the cornflakes routine. What's with the cornflakes?
He hasn't even added a line to it. That's a complete stand-up comic.
Yeah, that's the thing. You got to add lines. You got to change the routines
around.
That's
the one that fucking has always killed me. I might as well go up on stage and improvise if I know you're going to see me now. In a 45-minute set, there's usually 4 or 5 bits. If I bring 2 of them up that you've seen before and I improvise the rest, I understand that. But to come up with the same material, the same style... The same way I had done it the year before, that's never going to happen. That's never happened in my fucking world. So,
well, it's interesting with you, Joe. Like, you'll, for example, you had a bit about your cat dying that you did on the CD, but then you use a little piece of it to get into new stuff a lot recently. Like, you just do it, but it's not the whole bit. Do you think people realize that, or do you think they go, oh, he's just doing old stuff? Do you think they see the difference?
Some people say he's doing old stuff, but some people say, listen, when you go see the fucking Beatles, I'm not saying the Beatles, okay? I'm sorry to use that.
Stones?
No, any band.
They can do the same songs.
You know, you want to hear 3 of their, what you think are their favorite songs. It's whatever the consumer thinks, you know. You know, when you go see Black Sabbath, you want to hear fucking Sweet Leaf and whatever, the cocaine song. I don't know.
And that's the thing. Sometimes people come up and go,
yeah, you didn't do that. Yeah. You didn't do that.
Where's my bit, man? I love the one you did about the thing. And you're like, I haven't done that for 7 years. Yeah, you know? Like,
God, I haven't done that in 6 years. I don't even know that.
Right, I don't remember it. Cause, and then when you try to remember stuff.
Oh, my God, on stage with the light on you. And you don't remember. That happened to me a couple weeks ago.
And you don't remember the intro? You don't
that did happen to me a couple weeks ago. He was there. Lee, you need a little piece of star.
No, I don't.
I can tell. You're not high on that mushroom.
Oh, my God. I'm having a little bit of a panic attack.
No, you're not. I've never
had to switch the cameras before, and I want to make sure I'm getting, like, who's actually on talking.
You look fucking beautiful. Don't worry.
No, I'm on, but, like...
Take a little piece of the star. Relax a little bit. That's what you need. You need to... You know what I'm saying? To slow up the mushroom. You're fine.
My insurance company's going to use this video against me. Like, oh...
What fucking insurance?
He did it to himself.
What insurance? You look beautiful tonight.
Oh, my God. All right,
why
let's
you,
do
oh
it.
Oh, my God. Why you, oh, my God?
Because that little bit, like, it was literally this big.
That was given to me by a patron in Chicago, in Indianapolis.
Oh, nice.
Kid who came. We started talking about something. Very sharp guy. Him and his buddy were there. We were talking some shit. We went inside. We spoke some more. It was Thursday night. We exchanged candies. I gave him some THC candy. He gave me some other stuff he had. And he goes, man, I got these mushrooms in the car. You got to fucking try out. I said, all right, fine. When I got off stage, we spoke some more. Everybody went outside and hung out for a while. And he went and had him. He goes, give Lee one and you eat two or whatever. But I only gave Lee how small of a piece did I give you?
Oh, my God. It was tiny. It looked like a little bugger, but it's like...
I don't want to send Lee to the hospital.
That's how I know it's strong, because it was tiny. Because you love giving me stuff. So if it's small, it's going to...
Come on.
It's like a little grenade.
You're fucking Captain Kirk of the Enterprise. How am I going to throw you to the wolves?
You love throwing me to the wolves.
No, I don't. Talk to him, will you, fucking...
I wouldn't trust him if I were you. You're doing exactly the right thing, Lee. Follow your instincts. Battle stations, Lee. Battle stations.
Thank God this is being recorded.
So what? You know, nothing's going to happen. You got the will ready, right?
No.
I thought you said the wife made the will for you. Here you go.
She made a will for herself for a class. Oh, my God.
It's a little piece there. It's 5 milligrams. You're going to live. So what else, baby? Talk to me what else.
You know.
The book. What's the book?
Oh, the
That's
book.
That's April.
May. May. It comes out on May 5th. You can pre-order it now at gregproofs.com. It took me fucking forever to write because I'm lazy and I drink too much. But eventually I got it done, and it's called The Smartest Book in the World, and it's all the junk I talk about on the podcast. Negro League Baseball. You know, I got all-time baseball teams of all these different historical eras. This came out of the podcast. Like, people would... I take questions and people go, who's your all-time Roman Emperor baseball team? And I go, like, well, Caligula's catching because he can handle balls. And, you know, Augustus is at first and, you know, this and that. So there's like, I think there's a greatest women of history one in Kings and Queens of England. There's a bit on how to steal art. It's pretty fun.
So how much did Whose Line help? Because it sounds like it's basically an improv.
Whose Line helps in so much as, you know, you're free to, like, imagine stuff, and I'm not afraid to fail, but writing is a much different discipline. You know, you can't put it down on paper the way you can say it, because otherwise it's like reading a transcript, and I think that that's a little more arduous for a reader to read something that's like, that has us and likes and pauses and, you know, all that. And so I tried to write it like a... You know, I want it to be funny. I've read it too many times. You know what I mean? Now, right. I had to submit it the other day, and I've read it too many times, so I don't find it amusing at all. I can only say this to your dear listeners, but I guarantee you that it's funny if you haven't read it 18 times already and you didn't write it. Then it's new to you. I shouldn't have even said it's not funny anymore, but that's how I feel. You know, like, I think it's funny.
You've
but
looked at it so many times.
You know
times,
what I mean? That's it's too familiar to me.
And then you start questioning it.
Right.
You'll
then
start
I'm
questioning
like,
it.
I should have written this part
what
different.
What the fuck was I thinking?
Well, I wanted to rewrite the whole book like a month before it had to be submitted. And, you know, my editor's like, no, you know, you don't. It took you 2 years to fucking put the book together. Don't do it. So, but it's funny, I think. And my wife did the illustrations. And I'm going to do a book tour all over the United States and Europe and shit. So it should be I'm really looking forward to it. It gives me something to sell that I'm proud of, you know what I mean? Like, not that I'm not proud of my CDs and stuff, but I would never bring a CD with me to sell. I'd rather you download it or whatever. I used to give CDs away at the podcast, you know, because I couldn't be bothered to stand behind a table and shit. But with the book, I'll be selling the books at podcasts and stuff, so it's a whole other bag. It's very much one-on-one, and I talk to everybody in the audience before I do a podcast. I go around the audience and shake hands and meet everyone there, and afterward talk to everybody as well. And it's really worked out as far as, like, you know, the connection between... That's what I mean about the difference between stand-up. There's no distance anymore with podcasting. used to be a little, I thought stand-up was the closest you could get, but I think podcasting is more intimate because when people are listening to it, they've got earphones on or buds or they're in their kitchen or they're in their garden or whatever they're doing, laying in the street, you know, chasing a unicorn, whatever people do with all their days. And so when I go to do the podcast, I try to make it aimed at you. You know what I mean? Not a big general thing, but like
I like the personal stuff listening. The podcast, yeah. Especially when it's live.
Yeah.
I like it to be maybe 200 seats and less.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like, I tried
big to talk horrible. To
call and they put us in big places and we learned our lesson twice. We learned that it's just,
it's got to be intimate. Connect.
It's got to be very intimate and it feels good. When you're doing a podcast and it's fucking, you're going back and forth with people in the audience.
Well, even
it just feels good.
Even if it's not a lot of seats, like the one place we did it just was a huge building. And I've heard comics talk a lot on podcasts about how it needs to be a small room with low ceilings.
Yep.
But it makes a humongous difference, even being on stage in the podcast, in the one place, the Ice House where we do it, and it's right above the stage. If you stand up, you're going to hit your head. And then at the other place we did it, and it was basically like a warehouse.
No, I don't like the bigger room for the podcast. Mm-hmm. I got to be honest with you. I don't like the bigger room even for stand-up anymore.
No. Me neither.
It's not. I don't think it's the way stand-up was intended.
I agree.
When I see a theater or I see an arena, I know sometimes when I go to a theater and I watch a comic, I'm in town, I go in and see Louis Black, or I'm a fan or whatever. I got to tell you, I can't hear. I'm fucking old. I went to concerts.
I'm deaf.
Me too. I am fucking deaf as a... Oh, my God. And sometimes people talk to me, and I just yes
mm-hmm, with that. Me too.
Because it doesn't matter. I don't want to say I can't hear you because I'm embarrassed. I go, they say it, and I can't hear him again. It happened at the airport yesterday. The lady was trying to talk to me. I couldn't fucking figure out which. I hear something different. I hear like wah, 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 wah. And with the noise, the more noise in the fucking room, the bigger the room, I'm not going to fucking hear you. That's why you won't see me at a bar or a discotheque or whatever the fuck they call them, clubs sitting there.
That's how long it's been since you've been there?
Go.
I can't fucking hear you. I cannot fucking hear you. So if this is a big room and there's something going on, I can't fucking hear you.
Now, also, I think like, I agree with you. And I think stand-up. I love the punchline in San Francisco because the back wall's maybe 20 yards from the stage, you know? I mean, it's everybody's up on you.
Everybody's up on you.
And that way you can raise your eyebrow or take it down or say something softly or throw something away. When you're in a giant theater, you got to jump around. It changes the temper, the timbre or whatever. It changes the tone of what you're doing. Well, I toured England for like 4 years in the 90s, and I played... decent-sized theaters. Every once in a while, a huge one, but mostly 250, 300. But you have to pump it up. You got to pump it up. You can't come on and be, you know, hey, how's it going? Like, I did a New Year's show years ago in San Francisco at the Palace of Fine Arts. And I have to say, I was pretty high when I did it. But it was Maria Bamford and Todd Barry. And they did fine, but it was a 1,500-seat room. And, you know, so Todd gets up and he goes like this, you know. And so everybody's kind of like, what? And I get up there and I'm just, you know, boom, you know, and then this and then this and running up and down the stage. I think if they're going to give me a giant stage and a million people, then I got to jump around. When you put it in a small space like Bar Lubitsch, I don't know if you ever go to Lubitsch.
Yes, yes.
I do the podcast there a lot. It's fucking the smallest place in the world.
Small.
It's fantastic. You can just throw one little thing away and it fucking lands. It lands. You can't do that in a 1,000-seat room. You can't casually toss something off or get a laugh with, you know.
It's interesting that you said the punchline in San Fran because a couple years ago you did what's that bigger club?
Cobbs. And the ceiling's really high.
Right. And he did Cobbs and then you went back and did the punchline and just as someone from the outside, you're like, oh, you can make more money at Cobbs.
Yeah.
Probably because there's more people, but you like the small play. It doesn't even matter about the money anymore.
Listen, I'm doing what I love, and I got to sit there in a place that I like Cobbs, but it's too big for a guy like me. It's just too big. It's just too big. I don't know what it is. I can't get my thing across. I can't make the facial stuff. Ooh. There's a lot of things that's lost. When I'm in a smaller place, I sell it a lot more. I feel more confident. it's not about the money. It's about giving them the best show I could give them. Whether they paid a dollar or they paid $18.50 or they paid $27.22 with the fucking service charge,
yeah, right,
which we don't see. So it really doesn't matter. I just want to give them the best show I could give them. So I like 200 and under. 225 is perfect. If they're seated correctly, 225 is beautiful. 250 is beautiful. But I think anything after 275. You mentioned the Helium Clubs. The Helium Clubs are doing it correctly. That guy is not a fucking gavone. He does not eat with fucking three eyes. He has, and he knows his fucking market. Okay, he's in Philly. He's in a huge fucking market in Philly. But what's he seat there? 275, 300, yeah, yeah, right? That's all you need in a fucking showroom. He could be a fucking savage and put 550 in there. And
then what do you do on the weekends,
What do you do? It's savagery, guys. It's really savagery. You know, when I see those old, Richard Pryor or old George Carlin, I like the intimacy of the small room. I saw Lenny Bruce, the one I like. That's a theater, though.
Oh, that is? When he's reading up from the...
That's The Hungry Eye, isn't it?
Is it really?
Yeah, it's like the little club up on Broadway in San Francisco.
Come on.
The one that the movie, the black and white movie where he's reading the transcripts? Yeah, I think that's A Hungry Eye.
Oh, my God. See?
So it's toward the end.
I like
anytime,
that.
Anytime, small, short ceiling is imperative. And, I don't want them all over me, but I do want to be up close to the man. And
so do I.
I want to be able to see them. And also, we're comics.
I want them to smell my fart if I fart.
Right.
That's what I'm always thinking. I swear to God, not in a rude way. Yeah. But I'm thinking if I fart and six people around them, one of them is going to look at the other guy and go, who the fuck farted?
No.
Not knowing it was me. I like that. I really like that. Not that I'm going to fart. I'm just saying.
You might fart.
I might. How you feeling, brother?
Not good. Well, I mean, good.
You don't feel it, Mushroom. They ain't doing nothing.
Oh, come on.
They ain't doing nothing to you. Stop. You don't feel
it. I saw someone send me a picture that you tweeted about it. So, yeah, I'm feeling it.
Are there rainbows and waterfalls coursing through your mind?
There's not rainbows and waterfalls, but every time the camera switches, it, goes off in, little bits of the video, but it's interesting.
Are you switching it, or is it switching itself?
No, I'm doing it.
Well, you're doing a damn fine job.
I'm trying.
No, these mushrooms are doing the trick, this little piss.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they got me, too, for a couple minutes. They got me, too. They don't have me fucking giggling, staring me in the neck like I got Lee over there.
How long did it take you guys to figure out what you liked and what you didn't like? Like, to take 10 years or... Because I would imagine now when you walk into a comedy club, you know if it's going to be a good place to do a show.
Well, I mean, before you go, when they offer you a place, I always go online and look at who's playing there. And if I see that it's people that I like, then I'm in the ballpark. If it's people I don't like, or I don't know them, or I think they're hacks, or they're hillbillies, or whatever.
You do that, Joey?
All the time.
It's the first thing you do if you haven't played a room.
That's the first thing I do.
Because you got to see who's there. If I see Jen Kirkman and, Baron Vaughn, if I see people that are funny and great, I go, yes, I'll go.
And hip. You want to see a press?
Well, I want to see Chris Hardwick and Doug Benson's names there. I don't want to see, Hacky McSnacky and the Mountain Man and the Juggling Twins and Magic and this and that.
I have two comedians. If I see them in a room, I don't. One is Dustin Diamond.
Right.
As soon as I see Dustin Diamond's name
what's going
on the schedule,
you know what's going on.
I get off the schedule. If I see Jimmy Walker, I get off the schedule. There's two or three others that I just go off the schedule because if they're on that schedule, I do not belong there.
No, I've made the mistake a few times and played a few clubs where just, and you went, wow. And it's like greed can cost you your life, as they say, you just don't, you're unhappy the whole weekend. Then I end up just being drunk on stage and raging.
So let's say a club, you go to that club that isn't for you. What's the bad stuff? Is it the owner? Is it the people who are going there? What does it do?
I think it's everything, right? Sometimes it's the owner. Sometimes they're nice, and the people who go aren't nice. Sometimes the people are okay, and the owner's not nice. And sometimes it's just it's a depressed place. You'll go to a place where there's no one's had a job in 100 years, and they're methed out, and unhappy, and you think, well, I'm not for you. You want someone else. But then other times it surprises you, People always go to me, does your material go over in the South? I'm like, yeah, guess what? People from the South have read a book. They're smart. They talk to each other. Everyone doesn't drive a truck around. And it's not the Dukes of Hazzard every second. So I like going different places for that. But if they've got a lineup of really loud guys that I don't think are funny, then I get a little nervous that they're not going to get the smart crowd in for me. Not that I require a smart crowd. I can play to anybody. I like blue-collar crowds because they're not as fucking judgmental as bourgeois crowds that think they know what's offensive. You know, they're like, ooh, they'll go, ooh, and you're like, that wasn't even edgy. You know, do you watch the news? Do you live in the world? You know, wait till I say something hideous before you go, ooh. I was talking about Rick Overton once, and he said, hip used to mean you were really open-minded and could accept anything. But it doesn't always mean that. Even hipsters have little parameters that they fall into, I think, sometimes. Having said that, of course, I'd rather play to a hipster crowd. Like Helium, I think it's kind of a groovy...
Yes. I was just thinking Helium.
When I tell you that at the regular stand-up show, regular people come, then if I do the podcast, like in Portland or wherever, there's a million more hats, there's a million more tattoos, there's a million more girls with beehive hairdos. You know, all of a sudden it gets a little groovier. And then it goes good.
I think that's happening at all the clubs we're playing, though.
I think so, too. And I think it's been the best thing that's happened in comedy in a million years is the podcast thing has really pushed forward that comedy's fun and hip again, like it was when I first started doing it in the early 80s when no one knew what it was and everybody just came. And then it got kind of hacky in the like later 80s, you know, because the clubs were just filled no matter who was on. And that didn't keep the quality up. A lot of great guys came from that era, obviously, but there was a big winnowing when everything kind of slid for a while, and that was healthy, I think. And then the internet has made everything beautiful again because people can listen to you on your phone. You can make a video and put it on your website. You don't require a television station to be your mouth to the world. You have people. As long as they have a phone or a computer or know a friend who does, you're fucking in. You don't have to be a famous TV or movie star to get people to come see you. You know, it's fantastic. And I think it's made it more democratic. We're able to do this in this room, put it out, thousands of people listen. You weren't able to do that years ago. This would have been so much technology. There'd be big fucking tape recorders in here and giant ass mics and fucking Bakelite headphones.
Three Lees and shit.
But it is interesting when, because you've been doing the podcast for 5 years, we figured
close
out.
Close to, yeah.
That when we see a lot of people are overproducing them. Like, we just got all this new equipment in, but it's still just me, and it's just to make the experience better, but there's not people, not sound people, not people fake laughing, sitting, watching it happen. So it's almost sad when you see people, are they're jumping on the podcast bandwagon, but they just hired people from the TV production companies or the radio production companies, and they're not doing podcasts.
In the end, it's a conversation, and that's what people are listening for.
That's it.
And they're
listening
very closely as if they were on the telephone. That's how intimate it is.
That's it. I've been telling them.
They want to spend time when they're in their car.
They tap into a conversation.
Yeah.
That's all you're doing is boom. Oh, my God. What are these fucking people talking about?
And people write me and go, like, my commute's 2 hours. I wish your podcast was longer. Or, you know, I'm listening to all of them back to back. And you're like, how can you do that? You know what I mean? But if you have a long commute or you have a long ride on the subway or you take a bus somewhere or whatever the fuck it is, it fills people's time with something they can think about and that they can participate in as opposed to just being rattled off jokes to or a sitcom, which isn't very engaging. Sitcoms, you turn your mind off and you hope that it's funny. Unless they're superb.
Or radio, even anymore.
Well, radio's just blather and ads and then program music. I mean, you know, gee willikers. You go on these fucking stations and they play... Either it's top 40 like Katy Perry junk or it's... and not that she's junk, but you know what I mean? Like, it's all auto-tune that I hate. Or it's classic rock. And it's music from when we were in high school. And you're like, people still want to hear Lynyrd Skynyrd and fucking Aerosmith? You know, it's 1,000 years later, man. I was listening to this when I was 17, you know, like...
So that's what classic rock is.
Well, I know, but, like, that's what's holding down radio. There's not... You don't go to a radio station and it's the newest, latest fucking bands that are underground. You know what I mean? It's not that vibe
there's
anymore.
There's no money in it.
Well, there's no money in it, right? But there is, on the internet, new bands can put their shit on the internet.
Absolutely.
And we can put our new stuff on the internet and stay as current as you fucking like, as current as this minute. And that's what makes it so vital. Radio, for all it is, isn't very current. I used to say if it was on TV, it happened 6 months ago, you know. And if it's in the newspaper, it happened a year ago, you know. Plus, TV's forced to lie, and newspapers and radio are forced to lie because they're owned by giant corporations. And the giant corporations pay them money, and they're not going to let them get out of the comfort zone of the corporate lies they have to fucking tell, and the rich people that have to be satisfied by the numbers that come in and all that jazz. Whereas we are unencumbered by maybe a couple of ads, this and that, but it's no one's telling us what to say, and no one's we're not having meetings. And that's the beautiful part. You can smell a meeting when you watch a movie sometimes. You go to watch a big comedy or a big fuck-off blockbuster, and you're like, okay, they met over this costume. They met over how short her skirt was going to be. They met over this fucking scene. You know what I mean? Like, it just, you can smell the corporate decisions. And with podcasting, everyone's got their shtick, you know? But honesty is the order of the fucking day for the most part in podcasting.
That's it. That's
and
it,
I think that's the biggest goddamn difference between comedy you'd see on TV in any era and comedy now. I'm not saying clubs or records that comics did weren't honest. They always were. But podcasting is as open.
But now it has to be very honest.
Yeah, it's opened up a giant new
game. Now you have people watching you. People watching you. They're judging you by your words.
And so if they think you're bullshit?
Yeah, they know it. They smell fucking bullshit. Yeah. They smell it. Yeah. They've been bullshitted already.
Yeah, they've been bullshitted every minute because what do you, something like, what is it? I don't know, 5,000, 10,000 ads a day everyone has to sit through on your phone and the TV, whatever you're at. There's always ads coming at you. And this is the one time for an hour where you don't have to fucking...
No emails from Africa. No emails from Africa, cocksucker.
I sent you one the other day, by the way. I had all my money stolen and my credit cards, too, and I was hoping you could send me a couple $100. I'm in Tanzania.
That's fucking crazy. And it's amazing how they steal your friend's Hotmail.
Yeah.
And your friend will send you a note and they'll, I'm stuck. And you're like, what the fuck? Then you call them and go, hey, dog. Are you really in Africa? No, right. I'm in Hollywood.
Right.
Why? What's going on? Somebody stole your fucking email.
Right. What's I got an email from you that you're in Africa and someone stole your credit cards.
I get those once a week now.
Do you really?
I used to get Russian, like, you know, like the potency ads every once in a while. And you're like, who the fucking? They're just out there.
Somebody died. Somebody died, left you $6 million in your will.
Oh, yeah, that shit.
Contact me. Somebody in Russia left you $6 million. You know, that type of shit.
Not my dad, but I met some of his friends, and I met some friends of my aunt who's 92, and she kept telling me how Obama was Muslim, and so with all that stuff, I worry about like 90-year-olds who get computers set up for them.
Well, a computer should expand their mind, but I think people who believe one thing tend to run to the things that they believe.
No, but like, what if your grandma gets an email from you saying, "Oh, I'm in Africa, send me some money."
Well, there's a total threat to old people being scammed all the time. No, I agree with you on that. But as far as politics go, if you're 92 and you believe that, wow. You would have thought you'd have been around the block long enough that you wouldn't believe that kind of...
Yeah, I just smiled and said, okay. I
a Muslim.
It wasn't even worth the argument.
Probably our greatest Muslim president, let's be honest. Well, the other Muslim presidents weren't for shit.
It's hysterical when somebody old is losing their mind.
Well, you know, the sales pitch from that end is so oriented around fear and making you feel cosseted. And I think that's why they buy that shit, you know. It's really a matter of making you feel comfortable with crappy belief systems. And, you know, I don't think I have the answer. On my show, I'm always saying, question everything you fucking hear, including me. I go, I have an agenda. I have an agenda too. So don't just swallow blindly. But I go, when you hear something on the news and they go, controversial thing happened today, they said it was controversial. Maybe it was the real thing. Or, the protesters are out in the streets disrupting things. Really? How about when the police shot them? That disrupted things, too. It's always, you know, there's agenda to everything. And some people just swallow shit blindly. Whole fucking, you know.
That's half of
America.
They
said on the news that they just heard the bring.
That's three quarters of America.
Right. And it's like.
They fucking. And now we have 82 news channels coming at them and radio stations. So they don't even know what the fuck to believe.
And the cycle changes. What was important 3 weeks ago isn't important now. ISIS was important. Now they're not important. Then they're important again. The terrorist acts in France are the biggest thing in the world for 4 days. And then they're not important anymore, you know. But the situation carries on. And, like, that's the stupid part of news, that it's just a recapitulation of the... You see the same video sometimes of an event, like 10 times, 15, 20 times, the same fucking... clip, and you're like, that's not news. News is something you don't know. Not the same thing over and over again. That, And they don't want to tell the truth, you know. But having said that, Joey and Lee, I think that something I've noticed in the last few years is that that's broken down a little. I can go on a radio show, like a mainstream radio show, and say the rich are onto the poor. That's what's wrong with this country. The rich control everything, and they control the media, and that's why everybody perceives things the way they do. And whereas years ago people would have gone, no, that's not how it is. Now people kind of go, yeah, you're fucking right. And, I mean, I think the last election, for what it's worth, you know, when Romney lost, that was a real serious demonstration of, like, here's a super rich billionaire guy coming on with a billionaire's agenda. I'm going to cut medical care. I'm going to fucking make the poor fucking suffer. When they caught him say that casual thing where he went, people think they deserve food or whatever. And it was like, if you didn't understand, what did he say? They said they, what was it? They think they're entitled to fucking food and air and whatnot. And then, you know, Cheney came on at Christmas and he went, I'd torture again in a minute at Christmas time. And it's like, if you want to know what the rich are doing, they're telling you what they're doing. And it's controlling. And I think people are more aware of that now. A lot of people reacted to, like, Occupy and shit, like, oh, they're just smelly students and shit like that. And it was a much bigger, more profound thing. Not like when, I don't know, when I was little during the Vietnam War, but that was for real. The country was, it was a total civil war over young and old, rich and poor, people who wanted to fight in that fucking thing and people who didn't. And that's disappeared a little bit. And part of it is a function of the government, obviously. And part of it is a function of the giant corporations not letting there be real news. In Vietnam, you turn on the TV when I was little, and there'd be a reporter in a fucking battlefield, guns fucking going off all around him. Not embedded. I'm here, and I'm in danger, too. Now more reporters are killed because they don't protect them at all. Hundreds and way more reporters get killed. But you, unless you watch BBC or Al Jazeera or CBC or some outlet that's not controlled by the American media, you're never going to see any dead bodies of the people, like... The thing that they keep selling war all the time, we got to send troops, we got to bomb people, we got to do this. If they started showing all the dead people, then people would not be as for war as they are. And that's, you know, they really want to sell you it like it's this, like you can win a war. And there's no winning a war. Wars are there so that they can keep everybody poor.
Well, I want to see what they've done half the time. You're absolutely right. No, that's a great point. I want to see what's done. Why are we...
Yeah.
Why are we doing this? Let me see what they did. Let me see the damage.
Cat Williams have that joke? Like, they use insurgent, and like he said, like the thing he made funny, but he was like, I don't know, not one insurgent. And right. It's true. It's right. True. I don't remember what special that was on, but he was talking about it, and it's, I'm not anti-Fox. A lot of people are anti-Fox.
I'm anti-fucking news, Lee.
Yeah.
You watch the news and after 6 minutes you get depressed. You ask yourself, why am I doing this? I have something.
Is your grandmother a time bomb?
Yeah, I have something I could be doing. Which news outlet do you watch? You say you don't watch Fox.
No, I mean, I'm not anti-Fox. A lot of people hate everything that Fox does. And yeah, the news probably is definitely skewed, but then there's MSNBC, which is skewed the other way. I honestly don't...
It's not skewed as the other way as it could be.
Right.
There's no real, real lefty news on. Maybe Amy Goodman.
Right. It's not as skewed. But what I was thinking is there was that guy yesterday who got shot in downtown L.A. And the big thing was the people took the video.
Yeah.
There was just a video. I didn't watch it because I don't want to see somebody get shot. But I don't watch any... When we first started the podcast, we did it at 6 a.m. because you said news was too depressing. I don't watch any... local news. I don't even turn CNN on unless there's something big, but most of it I watch on my phone or on my computer. There's nothing I do. I was just laughing cuz you're finger in your mouth, but no, it's just interesting that it's all I don't have any news.
Interest.
Well, no, it's just there's no news outlet that I go to. When I was in college, I got most of my news from The Daily Show, which is skewed a little bit, but he's a little bit more...
I think a lot of people like you. They get it from their phone and the computer and The Daily Show.
And The Daily
Show. But I read a lot of different stuff all the time because I talk about it all on my podcast. And I think the foreign outlets, you get a different perspective. You get sometimes more news, actual facts and stuff like that.
Well, Vice has blown up in the past few years.
Vice is a good place to go because they have lots of stuff. Then, you know, there's the lighter, schlockier stuff like BuzzFeed and, you know, that kind of shit. But I think the British papers and the Canadian papers, also you get opinion. They do things like break down what's going on. you know, to tell you what's happening within the story, as opposed to American news where it's a big headline, some blood, and then whatever. You know, there's always a hook to sell you the news. And it's kind of like, well, news should be interesting on its own without, I don't have to see someone get blown up to fucking be captivated or whatever. But and they let rich people off the hook a lot in the news. Here's something I'll complain about, that, you know, like you were saying. The real news is what's happening around you all the time, right? I mean, and if the real news is the news of the what's going on, then people don't have jobs. That's important. Women are being hassled all the fucking time and abused. That's news. But you don't see those stories on the news because that's not a story they want to sell or that has any money to it or any traction.
Well, yeah, the news on television is governed by ratings like every other TV show.
Like entertainment.
Yeah.
So they can't tell you what the truth.
What I feel is that there's a lot of news we don't need to know.
Mm.
Do you know that? There's a lot of shit we just really don't need to know. And that's the downfall to me of the internet. That now I know everything fucking immediately.
Yeah.
Like when we were growing up, if something happened, McDonald's was getting shoot up, they'd go after it after an hour.
Mm-hmm.
After there was a standoff or something like that. Now, when the shootings were occurring, 3-4 years ago, Sandy Hook, I'm not sure what the date was, and I'm very sorry for this. It seemed for a period after that, if you pulled the BB gun out, it was on Google within 2 minutes. That's what they were pushing. They're not pushing it no more.
Yeah.
Now it's on third page of Google or Yahoo or whatever the fuck it is. It's whatever they're pushing at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Who determines what they're pushing, though? Is it who? Who wakes up in the morning and goes, today we're going to, if somebody gets shot in the fucking eyeball, that's who we're putting on the page. Right. I mean, who determines this?
Oh, well, different editors at different places. And I'm sure they have orders from above. Like, we're not getting enough hits. Put something on that'll...
Right,
you know, we got a nice shooting. Let's go to that.
I just saw. I just watched at the gym. Tomorrow Never Dies. It's an old 007 movie where Pierce Brosnan was still 007. But it was the bad guy was a news magnate, and he had a private army that was going around and creating news. I don't know if they're doing that now. You'd like to think they're not, but they could be. I mean, what's to stop them from doing it? I'm sure there's some people. So a lot of news channels have gotten in trouble for not showing the whole thing or selective editing or what's the Brian Williams who just came out that he just lied. And Bill O'Reilly, he lied too.
What did Bill O'Reilly lie about? I saw that the other
day. He said he was in, what was it, Beirut?
I didn't read that.
Yeah, and he's lied about a whole bunch of different things and, you know, said he was there, basically, or that he participated in things that he wasn't participating in. I think it was the first Iraq War, too, and, you know... They stretch the truth like everybody else, but they're entertainers like everybody else. What gets me is there's people who peddle opinion only, but they're considered news people, you know? And then you're like, well, no, they're just making stuff up because they want to push buttons. You know as well as I do, on a stand-up stage, it's easy to push buttons. If you wanted to get up there and just make people fucking scream and howl, you know, at different topics, you could just fucking do that by just introducing whatever. And I think you were manipulated like that all the time, but you know, the beauty of being around now is that you have choices. You don't have to watch TV and you don't have to listen to it. You can seek out other. I just would suggest to people that they stop being on Facebook and on Twitter every second and maybe follow a couple of other things where there's some more information.
If I'm on Twitter, a lot of my Twitter following is news outlets. Which are pretty interesting. Yeah. I follow a lot of news outlets on Twitter. Today, I was doing something at 5 o'clock. The baby was just waking up, and I switched to Channel 7 Eyewitness News. And the top report was, I forget what the fuck it was, but the second one was about the weather and how there was hail. And right away, I switched it because that's not the second best story you have to fucking tell me. Something happened that's affecting us right now.
Right.
I'm not talking about a fucking Glendora supermarket that's getting held up at gunpoint. There's got to be something that's affecting us. And it's not the fucking hailstorm in Burbank. I don't give a fuck about that. So I switch it off because they're not telling me what I thought I wanted to hear. I don't know who's at their house. Who gives a fuck about a leopard sighting in Kostiak?
Yeah.
We have a leopard sighting in Kostiak. Who gives a fuck?
Yeah.
Something's going on that's affecting me. You know what? open up with the 405. Yeah. Let's talk about the fucking 405 so people know what's where their husbands are and stuff. That's what gets me about any news outlet. And when something happens, they make it worse. They scare the fuck out of you.
Fear's the number one.
They scare the fuck out of you, and they scare the fuck out of America. Now you got these reports with Gupta and the other guy. Everybody's got their own little fucking report, and everybody's got their own opinion. But that person in Pittsburgh doesn't know that.
Yeah.
He thinks that this is, that they did scientific fucking facts on this.
People are afraid that ISIS is going to cut their heads off, and there's pretty much no danger of that happening. You would have to be there. You know, they sell you a lot. I mean, like, we have to take our shoes off at the airport because one guy tried to blow up a plane with his shoes, and that's been in effect for how long now?
Last time I walked through with my belt on, guys.
I do that all the time.
Nothing fucking happened. They got pissed off at me. Yeah. You don't take your belt off. You're a soldier.
When I was bigger, I didn't want to take my belt off. Now I do, but when I was 80 pounds heavier, I never took my belt off.
What happened to Tony Bennett? You forget about it. You always do it. Fucked up looking at the cameras like somebody's going to rob you. You look like one of those guys at the security place looking at the camera. One of those guys that come in. Little Tony Bennett feed just to suit things out. The candles.
Hey, your cats are crazy.
Oh, shit.
I want to be around to pick up the pieces.
What's up, Lily?
Somebody breaks. Nothing.
It's a beautiful night to be alive.
Yeah, these are fucking strong.
What?
These mushrooms.
How do you know it's not the little corner of that triangle in the red?
Because I have that. Dust. I have that corner. I have that. I usually have an entire star.
What's Tony
about? I'll leave him on.
Yeah, sure. Come on.
I have that 2 nights a week, and I know what that feels like. This is it's different than weed though. It's like I feel a little bit more energetic, but and then there's a little bit of the hallucinations, but nothing. Nothing crazy like I've always heard about. No, I don't want another one. None.
That's it. The media scares you. Mushrooms. You're going to see the devil. This is going to happen. That's going to happen. Nothing fucking happens.
No. That's one of the main things the media tries to scare people off of.
I got an email from a kid today, 26. He didn't know what to do with his life. I'm like, for starters, you got to live. You got to take the safety net away and live. But they got these kids so fucking scared.
Yeah.
Scared to pieces that they're going to fail or something bad's going to happen. Nothing's going to happen. You're going to live your life.
And also, failure is the most important part because that's where you learn. To bring it back to stand-up, but I talked to these two kids a couple years ago in Atlanta, and they were kids. I can say they're kids. I'm old enough. And I said, one guy says, well, we want to talk about our career. And I go, how long you been doing stand-up? And one guy goes, 8 months. And the other guy goes, like 14 months. I go, you have no career. You have no career. I said, you must fail a million times. And every time you fail, you'll be better. Never mind the sets you do well. Those are good sets. It's when you go up there and eat shit, then you got to fix everything. And that's when you, face yourself. Like you said, your process of going up and you improvise and you come to a discipline that doesn't work, you got to fucking fix it. And it's the same in life. If you don't try to do something, I agree with you, man. I say it on my show all the time. Carpe fucking diem. What are you waiting for? And this is the other thing I'm always... Don't listen to your parents if they're putting you down. Or your friends say, oh, you shouldn't do this. Or your teacher or whatever. And I had a teacher in college said, oh, you should be a character actor. You'll never... You know what I mean? Like, they want to put you in a box and you should do this. You shouldn't try that. I mean, fuck you.
And it's hard sometimes on the other side of it not to take compliments or mm-hmm. positive reinforcement too seriously. Because a lot of people, I've worked with Joey for like 4 years, and it's funny seeing comedians. I'm
sorry about that.
I know it's been a rough life, but it's funny seeing comedians who have everybody saying good things to them, and how much their act changes, how much they change, and it's hard. It's hard sometimes when I'm sure you get a lot of nice things people saying to you about your podcast and about stand up and. If you only listened to that, if you didn't read any of the bad comments, I'm sure your act would suffer.
Well, it's not so much the bad comments, because bad comments are, in my case, are usually people who disagree with me. And I don't get that many of them. But I have a wife who keeps me on the fucking straight and narrow with the comedy. If it's getting hacky or it's shitty, And also, I think we're our own biggest critic,
Our biggest critic.
You listen to your shit back, and when you're bored with it, or you repeat yourself, or you're just being hacky... That's when I'm like, oh no, gotta fix that. But I agree with you. You can't be in a bubble of people telling you how great you are because you're not that great. You're only as great as you are right now. You know what I mean? Like,
you actually see comics going into that zone.
Yeah.
Once you start, you see them going into that people love me zone, fuck you. And you look at them now and you go, I'm just going to give that motherfucker rope. He's going to learn the hard way.
Yep.
I have a friend who calls me once every 10 days to talk to me about his film career.
Mm-hmm.
Now, nothing's going on. He was on a show 15 years ago, mm-hmm. close to 18 years ago. But there's nothing going on. Nobody wants to see me. I've done more than most of these people have fucking done, you know. And it's like, it was fucking yesterday, guy. Who, you know, who gives a fuck? You have to do different fucking things. But to put yourself in this, you know, what are you giggling about, Liam?
Look, well, his eye is a dog, isn't he?
Your headphones, like, on your eye.
No, it's over here because
well, you know, he wants to hear through every orifice. Yeah, I'm going to sit on mine for a while, if you don't mind.
What the fuck are you like? I'm over here looking at him. I go, why is he giggling? Unless he sees something.
You're like very amusing when you wear your headphones over your eyes.
Look at him. Oh, he's gone. He's fucking. He is. How are you going to get home, cocksucker?
I have no idea. We'll find out.
Yeah, you'll be fine. Look at
Go have a burrito. You'll be all right.
Yeah, a little burrito, two burritos. When you guys do the, whose line is it? You said you drank. How would it be if you smoked a ton of dope before?
Oh, I get high sometimes, too.
Oh, Jesus Christ. That would be moving too fast for me.
But I don't, you know, I do it sober, too. I do it every which way.
Right, you do it every which way.
I don't necessarily get loaded every night. Usually we have a couple of belts, and maybe I'll have a couple of hits or something. But, you know, we've done this a long time, and I don't think it makes me funnier or anything like that. It makes it different for me. What I worry about is the timing, because if you're too high or too drunk, your timing's fucked for saying things. And also, improv is 90% listening. You got to listen all the time.
So I don't know how you do it. That's it.
And reacting. Reacting's funnier than, you know, like you got to react to something someone did. You got to react all the time. So if you're like, oh, man, that was, you know, you can't slow it down to the, you've got to be faster than the audience when you're doing improv. So. But we've done it a long time, so we're really comfortable with each other. And the other thing that we do in the group that I like is that we make each other laugh. We did a show a couple weeks ago in fucking Vancouver. We did two in Vancouver and one in Richmond, BC. And I was crying laughing the whole fucking show.
That's important.
Like, Ryan had me on the floor. Everybody, Joel Murray, they did this Mennonite dating scene, and he fucking went... The most intelligent of our people moved to North and South Dakota. It was like context of nothing of Mennonites, like they were Mennonites from Canada. And when he said that, I just fell out the fucking door. And we did an ice skating scene, and it won't be funny at all to listeners. But if you're watching an improv scene and it got set in it, like, where did you meet? Oh, it was an ice skating. It was roller skating. We met in a roller skating rink. So we skated through the whole scene. Everyone was backwards, of course, because it's funnier. The whole scene, everyone was going around in circles backwards and meeting each other and talking. And I was never so fucking happy. And I've done this for 1,000 years. I was just like, it's still fun as shit. You know, you get paid to be a child, but you have to be an intelligent child, a sensitive child that is picking up everything that's going on and barfing it back up. You can't just laugh at it. But I'm wildly amused by the other guys. I think that's the other thing, Joey. You know, you meet so many assholes in show business and people who don't like comedy that are in the comedy business. They're producers or they're managers or whatever. And they really don't like comedy very much. They could be doing anything. They could be in a bank. But this is their job. And so they, you know, performers But I am a
fan. You feel the difference, too.
Oh, very much so. I'm a fan of comedy. I don't watch it every night of my life because I'm doing it every night. But I love other comics. I laugh at their shit. I try to keep the petty jealousy of my fucking life to a lower boil so that I can enjoy other people's... All we do is talk about other... Tell jokes on the road and talk about other comics and do bits to each other and do other comics bits. And you know what I mean? Like, you have to be in love with it to get any joy out of it. Otherwise, fucking punch out. You know, I don't... You see people get burned out, and I understand that. A guy said to me years ago, he passed away, his name was Warren Spotswood. He was very funny. And he said... this is at the Holy City Zoo in like 1983. He goes, if you get burnout, stop. Maybe for a couple months, maybe a year if you have to, but never tell everyone you're quitting. Because you're not going to quit. You're a comic and you're going to fucking... And then you see like Jerry Seinfeld, whatever. In the end, he comes back to being a comic. You know, yeah, he had a TV show for 9 years. The first thing he did was go back on the fucking road and write a new act. And like, I totally respect that.
I have tons of respect for that.
You know what I mean?
Because that's what you are at the end of the day.
Well, that's what you are at the end of the day.
That's what you are at the end of the day. That's it.
Bob Newhart once, and he goes, this was years ago, 97, 98. And he goes, I called Billy Crystal the other day, and I went, why? And he went, I told him to get back on the fucking road. He goes, you got a gift. Get out there and write something. And at that point, he was probably 70-something. I said, how many dates do you do? And he's like, 50, 60 a year. You know, he golfed the rest of the time, but he was still doing dates. And Phyllis Diller was doing dates till she quit. The only reason Bob Hope quit doing dates was because he couldn't fucking physically get up and do it anymore. But he was working till the bitter goddamn end. I don't think we stop. You know what I mean? I didn't become a comic so I could retire. I intend to do it till the mic is prized from my fucking cold, rigor mortis, you know, laden fingers, man. I mean, as long as it's fun. And then, like you say, you got to do new stuff all the time. You got to branch out and...
I love laughing on stage.
Me too. I love God. When the audience makes you laugh or when something happens.
Oh my God. I love 8 minutes in when you just burst into laughter.
Yeah.
And they feel it now.
Yeah.
And you're laughing at maybe something stupid you said.
Yeah.
Or something stupid. Like today, I didn't know how to give Lee the mushroom. So I was sitting there tonight about 7:15. And I went and I... was going to get the star and cut a piece of the mushroom and put it into the star.
Oh, you're going to sneak it in?
And I made myself giggle. And right there, I said, why am I doing this? Yeah. And he called.
Yeah.
And I said,
oh, that's when I called?
I was just thinking about you, how I was going to sabotage your fucking star tonight. I love the fact that I make myself laugh from time to time.
Yeah.
I'm fucking 10-2. I fart in the middle of the night and I giggle.
Right.
Okay. I tell everybody my favorite. I used to have sleep apnea. If I could fart and smell it through the hole, I'd giggle my... I tell you guys, I put the fucking sleep apnea mask on a plane the other day.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did. I put it on a Delta flight.
Yeah.
Yes, I did. On the way there, it was broken. But on the way back, I was at that airport for fucking 6 hours. I put that sleep apnea mask on. I slept for 2 good fucking hours. There was a little Japanese guy next to me. I must have farted. That airport oatmeal with the dead raisins and the cranberries.
Right.
I must have cut
it.
I must have cut 6 of those bombs at him. I got to fucking hit Delta up. Those cocksuckers, that was a horrible experience. And you know what? Listen, I'm older now that I won't freak out at those things. It happens. There's nothing you can do if a tire breaks or whatever. But I tell you when I start to get pissed off, when I see tax-paying, God-loving Americans get pissed off.
Yeah.
Once I see people with suits getting pissed off, that's when I get pissed off. Because after 6 hours, just let me know what the fuck the problem is.
Give me a hotel room. Cancel whatever. Let's do it tomorrow.
But they keep saying 1:30, 2:15, 2:45.
Yeah, yeah, 4:20.
I'm sorry. They came from Cincinnati and they brought the wrong tire.
Right.
Are you fucking kidding me? Go get the fucking tire at whatever DuPont or... Let's do this. Get the tire on your own time. Go get a plane from the back. Get the fucking Puerto Rican to bring the fucking plane. It was amazing that I could, at 2:30, they finally, but they were very nice. They brought bagels.
Did they?
They opened up with muffins.
Wow, I got stuck for 5 hours the other day and no one gave us bagels.
The first fucking delay, they brought muffins. The second delay, they brought bagels with different cream cheeses. The third delay, they brought pizza.
Where were you coming out of?
Indianapolis.
Oh, okay.
Nice people.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's the heartland there.
Yeah,
they're Christians. Nice there. Yeah, Christians, right?
Fuck, I forgot to put the bagels down in my calories yesterday. I knew something was fucking missing from that airport. I just thought I ate the pizza. But I ate a little bagel, a little light cream cheese. Couldn't have been much. But when I got on the fucking plane, they said there's no meal on the plane.
What?
Because, and I'm in first class. Right. I upgrade. I've been flying for 35 years. They said because the food went bad.
Well, so go get more food.
No, they said we have to eat peanuts and chips and shit.
For 5 hours.
So I'm going to have to call Delta people tomorrow and get like 500 miles or something on the fucking cuff because that's what you do. You can't let people walk all over you.
No, you can't.
He said, just for a fucking few bagels, Lee, I can't have it. You know what I'm saying? What's up, Lee? How you feeling? Everything all right, my friend?
How's it going, buddy?
I'm good. This is different than last time. The last time I did mushrooms, it was at night, so I couldn't tell if, because we were at the Comedy Store, I couldn't tell if it was just the lights at night or if I was
having visuals.
I think
we should do another piece of this.
And thing. I'll meet you on the dark side of the moon.
Mushroom. Just another little piece. It's not bad. I told you it's not
and
bad.
And all that you know and all that you feel.
Let's do it. You want to eat another piece?
Watch The Wizard of Oz, man.
I don't want to do that at all. All
right, tomorrow night we'll eat a whole.
Watch Guardians of the Galaxy backwards.
Yeah, Lee, what was the last day? You have the blue shirt on?
I do.
You might as well go for fucking
blue. You do have a blue shirt on. I'd like to rent a video of you wearing that shirt. We're almost matching
tonight, Lee Zayat.
What's up, buddy?
We're almost matching tonight, see?
I did it on purpose.
You're in Violet Blockbuster. He's a regular Blockbuster.
Yeah, he's a bad motherfucker.
I miss Blockbuster.
What do you do the most of? You do improv still the most, or you break them right down the middle?
Podcasting, yeah. Stand-up probably the most of all, and then podcasting most, and then improv. Because we go out every couple months for like a week or two here or there, weekends in there. When Ryan wants to do it, it's Ryan's group basically, and I've been lucky enough to be in it for like 15 years.
Is Drew, it really? It's his group?
Yeah, well, Drew started it. Like when we were doing Who's Line, Drew took us all to Vegas in like 99. And then we ended up doing a bunch of Montreals with Drew and this and that. And then we would go out with all of us. Like there was, I used to call it the Preakness. There was like 8 or 10 of us, which is way too big for an improv group. Improv group should have 4 to 6, in my opinion. That way you don't wait. You're not sitting. If you're in a group of 10 people, you're going to sit through 3 scenes. And you get cold. You start looking at the floor. You start thinking, I should get a taco. I wish I had a, you know, your mind starts to wander. With 4 people,
boom, you're rocking the whole
thing. You're in every scene. So it's more like the Beatles, and you're right there all the time. But we don't go out every minute. And then people go, oh, don't you miss Who's Line? And I'm like, no, because I see them all the time. And when I go to England, I play with the English guys from Who's Line. And they have an improv group there in London called the Comedy Store Players, and they're hilarious. They're really witty. And I sit in with them. And so it's good fun, you know. And last year, I went to Ireland with some buddies who are all English comics and Irish comics, and we did improv and fucking giant tent in Dublin and shit, and little dinky pub in Galway that you're fucking sweating your ass off, and there's fucking 5 million Irish people in there, and the place is heaving, and you know, it's just fucking, it's fantastic fun, you know, and what could go wrong, really, you know, you're drinking, you're doing drugs, it's just
beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that's the whole, I didn't get into it to be like, what was that line in The Sopranos? I remember someone says something to Junior in one scene, and he goes, what are we in, the fucking Navy? And I was like, I didn't get into this to be in a big company. I got into this to do stuff with friends that I like and go places I wanted to go. So I've got to go all over. And, you know, we were in Vancouver a couple weeks ago. Vancouver's fucking groovy, man, you know, and like. And when I do the podcast, people, you know how it is. They give you stuff and they.
Look at these mushrooms.
Yeah, you interact with people. Yeah, there's a shared commonality.
I love that. I have fallen in love with that whole thing.
Me too.
I have fallen in love with the Twitter, Facebook, going to the shows, seeing the people.
Yeah.
I only tweet in the mornings. I only Facebook in the mornings. I don't fuck around. I got a life. But it's funny that the people that I have become acquainted with, you meet one or two at a fucking different city. And it really shocks. Let me give some shout outs.
I'm having a podcast listener on my podcast tomorrow.
Nice.
Token Lair's podcast is being released tomorrow. It's really cool because we meet a lot of nice people, but it's interesting when you get to have like a personal relationship with a couple of them.
Mm-hmm.
You must have been, how long have you been touring?
Oh, well, you mean as a comic? 125 years.
But you must, there must
I used
be
to tour in a wagon.
There must be people when you go to cities that you see that you've seen 6, 7, 8 times.
Of course. And the podcast people, I know them by name.
By name.
They come because they've emailed me, and I have an email called failmailforgreg@gmail.com if you want to email me. I read them all. I don't answer every single one anymore because there's too many to answer all the time, but I do answer a lot of them. And in Philadelphia, I just saw a guy I knew. I've met him in New York. I've met him in Philly. We've talked. 3 or 4 people in Philly I knew on a first name basis. I went over to a cat's house who I met at the podcast and did his podcast because he's a musicologist. I go into his crib in Philly, nothing but fucking records, CDs, and books, right? He's an academic of fucking music. And so we talked about comedy and music and performing. His wife's a teacher. I was like, and I don't know this guy.
He could have killed you.
Well,
fucking Greg would.
I brought him some books, and you know,
nah, you had the relationship before you went there.
He gave me some CDs, and you know,
absolutely.
Like,
I got those. Today I went to the mailbox. I found those Roach clips that they sent us. I got to review them, and I found two birthday cards from my man in San Francisco. You know, these are guys that are just, and my man in Chicago. Tremendous people that you can become, and I never thought that was possible. I used to laugh at that whole situation.
It's a personal connection.
It's a personal fucking connection. This week, Pat showed up at the fucking, you know, he was in, where the fuck he was?
Indianapolis?
Oh. Now he showed up in Indy.
Where are we playing in Indy?
Crackers.
Oh, Crackers.
Ruthann. Ruthann's very cool.
Yeah, she is really nice.
I like
her. Do you ever go over to, what's the McCallit, the one in Bloomington? What's the fucking name of that place?
Not years.
But it's a really neat, it's a nice room. It's like upstairs. You know,
I was very,
bacon sandwiches.
Indiana was very nice.
Yeah, they're lovely people.
The people were lovely. Indianapolis, the people were lovely. Let me give some shout outs here. I got a card from a guy that his kids made the card. And they said they're future church members, but he didn't leave his name on the card. I want to give you a shout out. Your kids are talented as fuck. I got the card in my pocket. I took it out. I hung it on my bulletin board. David Whiting, I love you, cocksucker. New York Rob, I got you. Kenny Sharrocks, Michael Jordan, Patty Shea, that's who showed up again. John Correa, Greg 9937, John Black, I love you, thank you, and John Lewis. That's who fucking showed up. How's that for you?
That's awesome.
So you become friends with these guys.
Yeah.
Sometimes they'll hit me up. You know, we'll try to meet. It's very, Dave Wilder shows up all the time. You know, Ookie Spooky. You get to meet these people from the podcast. You have a relationship with them. Cleo asked me to be on her podcast, but we don't have Skype. It's fucking just so many things that you now are possible over a fucking wire.
Yeah.
This is unbelievable. In the mornings when I'm fucking around on Twitter telling people to wash their pussy and fucking I'm putting music on and people hit me back. It's like I can feel their energy. It's as dumb as that sounds, I can feel their energy.
Well, they're enthusiastic.
They really are.
They're wired into it. It's not a casual thing. It's important to them, you know?
And they're important to me.
Yeah, very much so.
I have to do this on time. I have to fucking stick to my diet. There's so many little things I do because I feel like they're watching me now. We watch each other. We're like a little family. I'll tell you what really baffles me about you. Baffles me. With all the schmucks, and we're going to get a laugh out of this. You're with a regular mid-sized agency, and then we share the same agent for booking.
Yeah.
But I mean, you're theatrical. I thought you were CAA. I thought you had Jack Nicholson's manager who drove you to fucking breakfast every day. I thought that people lit your cigarettes.
I'm not in that game as much as I used to be.
It's amazing. I can't. I figured you for a CAA guy.
I had big agencies in the past.
Yeah, but
then some of them have let me go, and I've let other of them go. And I never seem to see eye to eye with them. I remember being with one agency once, and I booked two sitcoms in 1 week. I had to turn one down to do the other. And I went into the talked to my agent at the time, and she went, "What are we going to do with you?" And I went, "I'm sorry, what do you mean?" And she goes, "Well, we got to think out of the box for you." I went, "I just booked two fucking sitcoms this week." And she's like, "Yeah, but you're crazy. You're odd."
Yeah,
I mean, like, you're talking to the wrong person here. If I hadn't booked two things, then you could say this to me. Like, you're hard to cast. When you book two things in a week, you're not hard to cast. And I think that they get a little kooky. They want to put the people in. And also, they're under a lot of pressure to, you know, provide the people that they think, you know, that the people want and da-da-da-da. It's hard for them to be imaginative. You know what I mean? It's not in their...
It's 2015. It hurts my fucking soul when people don't think outside the box, whether it's fucking comedy or even open up their eyes.
Yeah.
When I talk to a club about podcasting and they look at me with three eyes...
What is it?
Guess what? I don't even want to deal with them in the stand-up venue because you're fucking gone. You're on another planet.
Right. You don't know what's happening.
And you know what? These are the guys you do, and this is why you do what you do. Mm-hmm. And I get it. And I'll never contact you again. I'll tell my agent never to bother you again. But that's how I feel about it. And we've had this. We were doing the podcast, and when I went to the management and goes, "Hey, can you lower the lights?" They looked at me like I had three heads. What are you talking? And then she turned around, and she kept telling the story. And I'm like, oh, my God, this is just so wrong.
Right.
I've gone into so many comedy clubs where you go, and the comedy club owner might be a scumbag, but at the end of the day, he's a fan. And he watches two of your sets, and he laughs, and he brings one of his friends to watch it.
Right.
And it's a better feeling than dealing with somebody who gives you a big paycheck, but treats you like a fucking drone. Yeah, he's just a fucking jerk off.
Right. What do you mean you want the lights lower? This is how we always have them. Yeah. Because I want it different from my show.
Right. Well, no. Because we're no. And it's amazing that they look at you with that look of fucking.
Oh, you're pivot on him.
Right now, you're a prima donna.
You're demanding. You wanted a table.
And we just see it different. We know what we want. We know what works for us.
Look, I need a table when I go in, and a chair, and two microphones. I make it very clear. I email them. If there's a tech person, I email the tech person. And then sometimes you come in, and nothing's there when you walk in. And they go, what did you need a table? And I've stopped doing that. Like, I won't do that anymore. I don't throw a fit or anything. Last week, they weren't ready technically for me. And I just calmly sat, and then it all got sorted out by Showtime, and it was okay. You can't lose your shit. But I really, at one point I sent out a giant email to everyone that I was going to work for and went, I get this many listeners a week. This is my job. I know to you it's just another fucking comedy night or whatever. But when I come in, please have the table ready when I come in for the sound check. Have the mics set up. Don't just fucking be like, oh yeah, we got to get another mic for you. No, you knew that for fucking a month, 2 months before I got there.
Lee, this sounds familiar.
Right. I mean, this is a constant struggle.
When you get there, right? When you get there.
And then they go, well, we don't have a jack that goes in the thing. And you're like, fuck you. I asked for a table mic. I asked for this. I don't ask for a lot. I didn't ask for a buffet. I didn't ask for special treatment. I wanted someone to be there an hour and a half before the show so I could fucking go test.
It's amazing how many comedy clubs supposedly don't have mics or cords.
Mm-hmm.
I have everything now. And it sometimes it's a pain in the ass. Like if it's in Los Angeles, it's in my car. But a couple of times I've had to bring it to on a plane, and it's a pain in the ass to get through security.
Yeah.
And but at a certain point, you don't want to have to deal with it. You don't want to have to.
But why don't they have mics and cords? And why don't they have a computer in their sound bay that they can record the show on?
No, they should. But
they don't. I mean, most of them don't. Even now, don't. And how many people are doing podcasts on the road? All of us.
Right. And one time, I forget where it was, I almost had to take a cab to a Best Buy to get a cable.
Right.
And luckily, they got it figured out, but it was just, it's amazing that I just do it now, and they might have it now, they might have it, but it makes it less stressful for me just to bring it.
How about, we can't play an iPod, or we can only play CDs, or we can't play CDs, we can only play this, or we can't play an iPad or CDs. Like, well, how are you playing fucking music back there? Well, we got a computer. Well, then how come you can't record the show on the computer? Because no one knows how to do it. No, you're not paying a good
sound. What fucking year is this?
1958? I mean, like, I can't fucking get over it.
I can't deal with it. I cannot deal
with it. It is the weirdest part of it. Because it happened to me last week. We don't have this cable. Or the cable was going the whole time. And I'm like, you guys. I'm not doing a Broadway musical where there's 25 mic'd people on stage. You know what I mean? And a full orchestra. This is one person talking into a mic, and all it has to do is go through one feed.
That's it.
I feel terrible. How many times have you gone somewhere, and at the end of the night you find out, or when you go back to your room and you plug it in, oh, the sound's messed up.
Yep.
And it happens all the time, and I feel bad, and people ask for the podcast, but even though it's supposed to be just a conversation, and you might be able to hear something that isn't perfect sound quality, I don't want to put out something. No. And I guess what it really is the bottom line, the club thinks, okay, this mic is good enough for stand-up, or this cord, no one said anything.
Right, it's been shorted for 14 years.
And why?
It's running through the wrong outlet. We haven't potted up too much.
Why spend the money? It doesn't make enough. It doesn't make sense for them to spend the money.
I did an opera venue, or a classical symphony hall in Omaha. Beautiful gig. My guy got it for me. They paid me a lot of money. They were doing like Stravinsky's Rite of Spring next week. So I was upstairs in a little concert hall that had the beautiful wooden walls and the baffling. Like you'd put a string quartet or a small orchestra in this room. And the guy came up to me and he goes, I'll record it. And I go, look, I can set up my Zoom right here next to the thing and I'll fucking push it. No, I'll do it from the board. He came out, my producers, Matt and Ryan, they got it and they were like, look, this is just, so they salvaged part of it. It sounded like a 40s radio show. So I came on in the beginning and went like, this one is a
Now we're broadcasting from the top of the ballroom here.
No, you always do your own shit. We've learned our lesson.
This guy was a technician in a classical. Like, I thought, well, I'll let the guy do it because, you know, maybe they record, you know, like Berlioz or whatever in here and opera singers. And it has to, because the sound in the room was fucking, you know, genius, right? And they had a bar set up in this upstairs concert hall. So people were juicing, you know, it's the fucking Midwest. And I had a fun show. I got drunk and I had a great time, but God, it sounded like shit. And I thought, if you can't play a goddamn symphony hall and have them
do it right.
Right, you know, like Chuckle Hut. Yeah, I get it. There's a guy, he's not really the sound guy. They pushed him into service. He doesn't actually know how to fucking push the buttons.
Most of them are just door guys.
Yeah.
And they have, on Wednesdays I do sound.
Right.
And they know that this fader lets them talk to the audience.
They've never changed the mic out.
Which is fine. I'm not asking, not everyone has to be a sound technician. And I'm not even a sound technician. The craziest thing about, for me, the last couple weeks I've been redoing the tech in the studio. There's no guidebook, and it's just a lot of like I don't have a sound degree, and I haven't spent years doing sound. And yeah, sometimes the sound isn't great, but I'm not just, you didn't just go off the street and someone felt an application. And the one thing I learned when I was working, because I've only been doing this full time for about a year. I was doing this part time with I worked in TV. And when I was going to do interviews for a job, I would never say I could do something that I couldn't.
Yeah.
It's the worst. And that's, if the sound guy at the opera house had just told you, yeah, plug in your thing. I'll try to run it through the board. I'll try to do it myself. But it's almost like it's lying. And they feel lied to.
Right.
And it's terrible when that happens.
And I wished I'd just done it myself, and then I would have had it. And anyways, how long does this go, Joe? I don't mean to be a spoil sport.
No, I just want to ask you one last question.
Okay.
What made you do, since 2010, I've been bored with, I thought that the traditional microphone brick wall was going into a weird direction. I saw that some clubs were building higher,
mm-hmm.
and everybody was trying something different, but nobody went crazy. And then the specials, Lee, what have we been talking about? Doing a special somewhere different. I don't want to do a special in a fucking theater because I don't mm-hmm. like fucking theaters. Mm-hmm. Right? If you're trying to promote me with that icky, stupid way, it's 2015.
Right.
And all of a sudden, one day, maybe a year and a half ago, I hear on a Sunday night you're taping a special at Musso and Frank's, a historical restaurant in the heart of fucking Hollywood. What made you pick Musso and Frank's?
Well, I wish I could say it was my idea. We were looking around for a theater. We went to all these places. You go to a place and they go, we want to shoot for tonight. You know, we want to shoot a stand-up show. $10,000 run. Seriously. Theaters here in L.A. $5,000. And I was like, we don't have that budget. My manager went to Musso's for like a Munchkin's birthday party. I'm not kidding. And he came to me the next day and he goes, I've got it. Musso's. And so we had lunch with the owner and we made a deal. And we put a jazz band in, and we filled the place with smoke, and we got a brilliant director, Marcus Raboy, and a brilliant producer named Neil Marshall, and my managers over at Brillstein, and it was his idea, and I immediately, the minute it got out of his mouth, I was like, exactly right for me. It's martini glasses, a fucking suit and tie, the waiter's got the gold coats on.
Tremendous.
You can see them walking around during the show. We served booze and food during the show. You know, we had it, you know, you could, if you came, we did a small audience in the back room there, so it was maybe 70, 80 people. And I stood on the floor, had a table next to me with my booze on it. And it was just, and my notes and shit. It was like the perfect atmosphere. And we only got one pass. I didn't do two shows. And I improvised a bunch of it. And I'm not telling you which parts I did and other parts I'd worked on. And I let that happen, you know what I mean? And there's a few things I wish I had back, but I think it was better to be spontaneous and do it in that beautiful room. And everyone felt so great. It was like a Sunday afternoon. Everyone came in fucking clothes and, you know, hats, and the band was
going. I know Justin said he went.
Yeah.
I remember Justin.
Oh, yeah, Justin went, yeah.
Justin said he was gone. I go, fuck, I wish you would have told me earlier.
Yeah, well,
I would have loved to have seen this whole thing. I thought it was brilliant, man.
Yeah, I wish I could claim credit that I picked the place. It was one of my favorite restaurants. So when my manager said I was at Musso's the other night, I was like, so we went in and like, you know, with everybody, what can we clear out, you know, so we just move some tables, that's all. And no stage. First we're going to build a stage, and then we're like, don't build a stage. Musso's doesn't have a stage. I'll stand on the floor with the waiters. We had a waiter introduce me, Ruben, Sergio, and it was fantastic.
I love all that stuff,
man. Everyone had martinis, you know. Everyone got juiced on Sunday afternoon and started early, you know, so you could live your life.
No, I love that shit. I'm going to read the sponsors, then we'll get the fuck out of here.
All right.
Greg Bruce, where are you at this week?
Thank you for asking. Tomorrow night I'm at the Nerd Melt doing my fabulous podcast, and then this weekend I'm off, baby. Next gig is in Santa Barbara at the something brewery company. You can go online, look it up. I'm doing the set list in Santa Barbara on the 21st.
Yeah, I just saw him the other day. He's a great kid. The kid that books it with...
Troy.
Troy's a pretty fucking kid.
Yeah, he is. Good guy.
Lee, what are you doing, cocksuck? Everything all right? The mushrooms roll off.
Yeah, everything's right. I told you. I'm releasing my podcast tomorrow.
Okay.
And that's it.
What's the name of the podcast?
Flying Jew Radio.
Look at you.
Flying Jew.
Fucking shirt on.
The name he gave for me. But no, yeah, people like it.
Okay. I had a great
time. Where are you, buddy?
This weekend coming up, I'm in another frozen terrain, Cleveland, Ohio.
You'll love that. You'll love hilarious.
No, I love all that stuff. I've been there before and I love it. It's been too long. Last time I went to the Improv and the Neighborhood Chains, yeah. I used to go there when it was Sarah Nine. And Sarah Nine left. Then the other guy with the sleep apnea took it over. Then it became a fucking urban club. So
who the fuck knows what's going on?
LeBron James is going to come down?
They put you across the street. There's lots of nice restaurants on that block. There's a Mexican. There's like a little groovy hipster place across the street that does artisanal burgers and shit. It's fucking really nice.
Doug, it was really nice having you here.
Thanks, Joey.
I wanted to have you on for a while. I've always been a fan of improv, but not really what comes with it. And you're not that type of dude. A lot of those improv guys, you go and they look down on you at I.O. and the other places. And I've seen how you act at the improv. You've always been a gentleman to people. So,
thanks.
I was very excited when I could get you on. Trust me, I'm telling you. I even totally, I didn't give a fuck what came out of your mouth. It was just something that, it was like a personal thing for me, so...
Well, humor certainly didn't, but there we are.
Lee's all right. Lee's going to be fine. Lee's going to eat some mushrooms with his Uncle Joey. We'll be fucking fine. Yeah, I've been... Hilarities this weekend, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Then next week I'm in Sacramento. Then I'm home for a fucking month. Why fuck around? It's the end of March. Stay at home. Relax. It's Easter. The wife's going away for 3 or 4 days. I'm home solo. Are you going away for Easter this year, Lee?
No.
What are you doing for Easter? You're going to go on an Easter egg hunt with the wife? What are you going to look for?
I don't know. I don't think they
Easter's fucking sacrilegious for Mexicans, dog.
I don't think they
do anything. You can't be slinging dick over there during Easter. Those legs shut down on Thursday.
No, they're not religious.
After the Last Supper. They got religious pictures all over the house.
They do, but they like she has like prayer groups that she goes to, but she doesn't go to church. They never go to church.
Doesn't mean though. They're still religious, cocksucker. They don't give up that ass during the fucking holy season, trust me. You'll be over there holding fucking little pinguitas fucking around. Little shout out to my fucking lovely sponsors, Onnit. Yeah, what is it?
Onnit.
What is it? Optimization.
Yeah, it's optimization.
Optimization to the max. You understand me? That new T plus testosterone got improved. If you're lacking testosterone, if your dick's not working, go test out the new formula. It's cheaper, nice little packaging. They give you a couple vitamins in between there. As usual, Alpha Brain's alive and kicking. And you know my personal favorite, the Shroom Tech. If you want to
Immunosport.
An amino sport.
Shroom Tech Immune or Shroom Tech Sport?
Sport. I'm a sport guy. I need the fucking all the oxygen I can get. I'm a fat fuck. I'm not like you. You got cardio for 2 hours on that elliptical. That's how he lost the 90 pounds. Nice. This guy. He's a fucking savage. Also, shout out to, listen, I'm sick and tired of people sitting at home going, Joey, what am I doing on a Friday night? Go to Iron Dragon TV, a Roku channel, classic martial arts from day one. You understand me? Hitman. Fucking Charlie Chan, Jackie Chan. They got every fucking Chan you've ever looked for in your life. You understand me? Dave Foley don't fuck around. Go to Iron Dragon TV right now, today. Get your weekend started. Even on a Monday, who gives a shit? What are they pressing the box, Lee?
Joey.
Boom! Joey, you get 2 free fucking movies on the arm. No questions asked. You understand me? You sit there, you see the wires, you see Godzilla. Whatever classic martial arts you got, what they got. They don't fuck around. Also, shout out to my main motherfuckers at Hit E-Cig Cigarettes. I don't have none here, Lee. You got your slipper.
Yeah, you do.
You didn't. I asked you. You said you didn't have
none. No, I didn't. You want a cigar one?
Sure. What the fuck? You're slipping. You're sitting there for 2 hours with the new haircut. You got gel in your hair, dude. Hit E-Cigs, the best. If you didn't quit smoking yet, you're fucking slipping. You got 24, 16, 8, and 0 milligrams. It'll take you right to the fucking hoop. You live another day, cocksuckers. You're looking at me going, Joey, but I smoke cigars. Bam! No problem. Hit E-Cigs comes at you with a fake fucking cigar. If you ever Musso and Frank's, you just pop this motherfucker out. Like a fucking doctor, you understand me? Electronic cancer goes right into your fucking lungs. There you have it. I fucking love it.
Press Joey's Church and get 20% off.
That's right. Get 20% off right now.
Electronic cancer.
What the fuck? I love it. I don't give a fuck anymore. Who gives a fuck?
And you know what the cool thing is?
I got 1 foot in the grave with a banana peel. What do I give a fuck?
I saw a commercial for one of the popular ones, and they were the big thing they were saying is, oh, 550 puffs.
Fuck that. We give these 1,200 puffs for $18.
More than double.
You can puff your fucking way right into whatever you want to do. You'll be puffing, eating ass, drinking, whatever the fuck you want.
Eating ass?
Sure, you got enough oxygen. Go to Hitty Sigs right now and get 20% off, and they ship wherever you need to ship. What's the story? What's the code?
Joey's Church.
Beautiful, Joey's Church. And don't forget nailedinlife.com. After you smoke that Hitty Sigs cigar, you want to smoke some vapor, you want to fucking get high and see the devil. That's your answer. Nailedinlife.com. Everything for the dab lifestyle. The torch, the sticks that don't melt, the fucking rock you put it on. If you're looking to dab, you can dab yourself to fucking death. Go to nailedinlife.com. So on if you want to get...
No, nailedinlife, you press Joey Diaz. Yeah. You get 20% off.
20% off. That's right. So you go to honor.com, you get 10% off, you press Joey.
Who gave you these mushrooms?
Don't worry about who the fuck. What's with the questions? Oh, they're tremendous. I love them. You sure you don't want to take one to
go? No, I'm fine. Thank you.
Okay. I'll let you have one to go.
Well, maybe I'll take one in a doggy bag.
Nah, fuck that shit. I'll give it to Lee. I love you guys. We'll be back Wednesday. Stay black. I want to thank Greg Proops one more time and Lisa Ayad for taking the shrooms. And everything's beautiful. Have a good night.
Go to onnit.com and use code word church to get 10% off of all the great products.
Oh, fuck. I'm sore.
Go to nailedatlife.com and use code word Joey Diaz to get 20% off. And, let me just switch cameras.
I love it. Can I have the keys to the
bathroom? Yeah.
Your ears are fucking all red shit.
How you doing, man?
Not good. Well, good, but...
Not good.
All right. Go to nailedatlife.com, code word Joey Diaz to get 20% off of your order. Go to hitesigs.com. Use code word Joey's Church to get 20% off. Better tasting, longer lasting. The proof is in the vape. And go to irondragontv.com and use code word Joey to get 2 free rentals of all of their great martial arts movies.
Tiene su final. Nada dura para siempre. Tenemos que recordar que no existe eternidad. Como el lindo clavel. Tiene su final. Nada dura para siempre. Tenemos que recordar que no existe eternidad. Como el campeón mundial.